It's all the files of the whole park. It tells you everything.
Sir, he's uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
What if I told you that your phone could be hacked for $16, and all the texts that were meant for you were rerouted to someone else with nefarious designs in your most personal exchanges? Well, it's a real thing, and it happened to Motherboard reporter Joseph Cox, who's on the show to explain. In fact, we were recording another interview and Joseph was being hacked in real time. We start there on this week's episode. I'm Ben Maku, and welcome to Cyber.
No, I've actually just turned on my recording. I'm literally being hacked right now, and that's why I was late.
What happened?
This researcher is just going through this relatively obscure technique for taking over phone numbers, and he got into my Postmates account just now, and I got a notification. And let me just check my text messages one second. Yep, I think he just got a text message from Lorenzo, which is not going to my phone. It's going straight to the attacker's phone. So, yeah, this guy is now me.
Wow.
And it says, you know, can you relay my message to Joseph to confirm you got it? So this is some real-time hacking, man. We're doing it right now. This is it.
and you obviously, like, arranged this with the guy beforehand.
Yeah. We arranged it, and he's doing it with my consent and all of that. And, I mean, they're launching a service that can protect against this sort of thing, but the reason I'm interested in it is because it is just a really weird avenue of attack. We'll go more into the specifics at some other point, but basically it's not simjacking, it's not ringing up the telco, it's not SS7, it's using some really obscure companies that I've personally never even heard of, and now he has control of my number, and it's screwed, and I don't even have any warning on my phone. Like, I'm looking at my phone right now, it has a T-Mobile SIM card in it, and I have signal, apparently, you know, as in I have reception, but I'm not getting any texts, but it hasn't warned me that I've been hijacked. It's really, really crazy, and how alarming it quick and easy it was, it seems.
So if you got hacked like this, like for real, and not set up by one of your friends, one of your researcher friends,
right,
you wouldn't recognize this happening. This just, you'd be going on with your day and not knowing that your texts are being harvested.
Right, like maybe I'm missing something, but I'm looking at it right now and it still says I have like LTE and it still says I'm on T-Mobile. Whereas if you were like simjacked, what would happen is that you would lose signal on your phone. And that's like a symptom that lots of people who fall victim to simjacking have. They're like, oh, I lost signal. And then I got a notification from Gmail that someone broke into my email account. Or I got notification that someone got into my Bitcoin Coinbase account or something like that. But I've received no warning at the moment so far. So this guy is just rummaging through my stuff. And again, I'll check my other text messages in a minute. But he's having a field day right now. You know, I'll let him do that. And we'll get back to it and see how much my life is ruined.
All right, so Joseph, last we heard from you, you were getting hacked. Your cell phone was getting hacked. For most people, that would be an absolute nightmare, but this is something you actually set up yourself.
Yes, last time we were speaking, as we were talking, somebody had taken over my redirected text messages to theirs that were meant to be for me and then getting into my accounts. And I mean, what actually happened is that Lucky225, a pseudonymous security researcher and director of information at Oki Systems, which is a cybersecurity firm, with my consent, they rerouted my text messages to their phone. Now, that may sound like something you've heard before. Oh, yeah, it was probably simjacking or SS7.
The SIM is the small card that contains your phone number. The hackers got Rob's carrier to swap his number off his SIM and put it on their phone. That redirected Rob's calls and text messages. Messages, like the ones you get when you need to reset your account after forgetting a password. The hackers had access to security codes and had full access to his account.
But no, what makes this interesting is that this was a relatively obscure attack, making use of companies in an industry that nobody really pays attention to. And the short version is that Lucky paid a company called Sicari $16, and then that gave him the capability to reroute my text messages. It is that simple. That's all he did was pay money, enter my number into a dialogue box, signed a little form promising that he had consent to do so, and then a few minutes later he got my texts, including, you know, login tokens for various online accounts, which he then broke into.
And okay, so how is this going to affect just like your regular person? Like, is this something that you could see being widespread that is particularly dangerous?
So ordinary people already have to worry about simjacking, you know, which is when a hacker will phone up a telco or whatever, trick them into porting the phone number onto a different SIM card and they can get your login codes like that. And ordinary people face that sort of thing because of harassment or breaking into online accounts, bank accounts, stealing cryptocurrency as well. When it comes to this attack, we don't know how widespread the use of it is yet, but the information is out there, and certainly the capability to do so is out there. Sicari did put in protections to stop this sort of abuse. Now, when you add a phone number, the phone will actually, you know, get an automated voice call saying, hey, did you sign up for this? Do you consent to rerouting of text messages? So that's there. But again, this is a whole industry. This isn't just one company or one failure point. It is a systemic delegation of not only the capability of rerouting text messages, but the delegation of obtaining consent to do so. And there are plenty of other companies where you could go to and start rerouting text messages of a target, be that, you know, an ordinary person or someone at a company or potentially, you know, a government official. But to be honest, if we're talking about targeting government officials by another state, I mean, obviously states have much, much more sophisticated ways of going about it. But any random person could sign up to Sicari and just do it.
Welcome to Sicari.io, a place to send and receive bulk text messages with anyone.
And do you, I mean, this is the thing. It's that, like, who would use this to sort of mass employ it to scam for money? Because obviously you're the guy who have broken a lot of news on this. I mean, how might a criminal use this kind of tool?
I mean, a lot of banks rely on two-factor authentication, which is delivered by SMS. I know banks are increasingly moving away from that. And of course, they have other mechanisms in place, you know, such as browser fingerprinting and that sort of thing. But still, SMS 2FA or SMS password reset tokens really do provide a very good avenue for criminals to break into accounts. So if you can get into a bank account, of course, then you could potentially at least view balances, if not redirect funds. Of course, it, you know, varies from bank to bank. You could get into somebody's email account potentially and get more information that way and pivot off that to start finding some, you know, some way to generate money. Or you can even just extort people in the end, right? We increasingly see that with hackers breaking in and then trying to blackmail the victims for cash to avoid releasing secrets. And it really always just boils down to not just the issue with Sicari in this industry and the ease of rerouting text messages, it also comes down to online services, online companies' reliance on using SMS as a login or a verification method. And now that we have simjacking, now that we have SS7, now that we have, you know, even when you buy a SIM card, you sometimes accidentally get somebody else's text messages that were meant for them anyway. That's happened to me several times. And now we have this as well. SMS is just an antiquated mechanism for actually verifying who you are.
That was kind of one of my next questions, because I get this every once in a while. People ask me, they're like, is two-factor actually good and is it effective anymore? And lately I've been wondering, I'm thinking, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, two-factor is a fantastic mechanism and tool for protecting your online accounts. It is incredibly important, but whereas there are more and more of these attacks on SMS, it shows that SMS two-factor authentication specifically potentially enters and introduces new risks to a target. I mean, I remember years ago, I was at some sort of technology conference, and an activist from Egypt told me that he does not put 2FA on one of his accounts. And specifically, this was SMS 2FA at the time because nothing else was available. Again, this was a while ago. And I found it very baffling. I asked him, look, why are you not putting 2FA on your accounts? This is insane. He's like, well, in Egypt, you know, the government owns the telcos. And they'll just redirect your text messages. And adding the phone number actually made him less secure. And in a way, of course, I'm not trying to compare, you know, the everyday digital lives of everybody else to a targeted Egyptian activist. But the same sort of principle applies, at least in some cases, that introducing a phone number can add additional risk. And that seems to be the case here.
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, I've gone to places, I've reported from places like Russia or Pakistan, and every time I've gone in with a complete burner that has nothing to do with my name and number, and that's the only way I can really kind of, and even then, you're still risking that someone can read your text messages.
Right, absolutely. And let's say you were in the country and then you requested a login token or something like that, or a 2FA token, some sort of third party could potentially do that. But to get back to the sort of what this means for ordinary people, the risk is the same somewhat in that, well, you get a login token, you get a 2FA token. But what is different here is that I don't need to be technically skilled, have technical knowledge, or even really be a hacker to leverage this. Like, I don't have to ring up and socially engineer, you know, AT&T or T-Mobile or whoever. I don't have to get access to the SS7 network, which, you know, the vast majority of people on the planet obviously cannot do. I cannot do, at least on a technical level. But with this, when you fill out a form, sign a piece of paper, enter a phone number, that changes the risk calculus when it's that easy.
Yeah, no kidding. So I got to ask as well, because this story got a lot of traction. I think it's pretty much been our most popular story this week at Vice Period. Why do you think these types of stories hit so hard for people?
I mean, there is often a danger. And to be clear, I don't look at the traffic, so I have no idea on any of my stories. But I can tell if I get more tips or something like that. And usually when we'll write about phone security, maybe it's SS7 or maybe it's simjacking, I get a few people reaching out, you know, but it's because we've heard of all of that stuff before. It's got very boring. People probably have fatigue of it and that sort of thing. But what made this one different, I think, was the price specifically, you know, and I really, really pushed that in that $16 to reroute someone's text messages. People get that. People understand that. A lot of people have $16, you know, and they say, well, and I can just apply that and then reroute these text messages. That's insane. I think that's what gives it the wider appeal there.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, the other thing too that I think the story why it's such a significant one is that, you know, I think you've been in this reporting on cybersecurity for a while now. And I think just how sophisticated and easy and accessible a hack like this is compared to how it was, say, I don't know, even a decade ago. Mm-hmm. Really speaks to sort of like this, I mean, the professionalization, or maybe not professionalization, the increasing power of hacking and of people to get access to tools and to things that previously seemed sort of the scope of nation states. And now it's like for $16, and like you said, a lot of people have $16, you can attempt a hack like this.
Yeah, I mean... When I was, so we did another story in 2019/2018 where I paid $300 to a bounty hunter source who then geolocated a T-Mobile phone, you know, similar sort of thing, and that they're testing a capability with consent and there is money involved. And that's sort of the point of the story. And of course, when I did that story, it was fascinating and highly concerning. In this one, I feel like I said, oh shit, out loud, like a lot more aggressively and sincerely when I saw what was possible. It was just mind-blowing. It was mind-blowing that you could enter a phone number into a dialogue and you could reroute their text messages. Like, what use case is there possibly for doing that without a consent mechanism? And it does just boil down to, again, not only, you know, the gaping holes in SMS when we have this incredibly old protocol and the infrastructure around it, but just the telcos in general. You know, this is not a one-off. They were selling location data before. They've now somehow provided the capability for other third parties to reroute text messages. This is the telcos always ultimately at bottom, you know?
Well, I got to say, Joseph, if you are afraid of something surveillance related, that terrifies me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't use a phone. As you know, but I had to go buy a SIM card for this. And I do want to shout out the two really nice guys in the T-Mobile shop who see a guy come in dressed in all in black with his black mask and just looking very, very shady. And then they ask me, do you want me to put your name on this card? I'm like, no, I'm okay. Thank you. So they immediately got the vibe of what was going on. Like a guy storming in saying, "I want a SIM card, no contract, just nothing. Yeah. Please give me a SIM. Yeah. Please give me a SIM card." And it worked. So thanks to them.
Well, I mean, you are sketchy, let's be honest.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Joseph.
Thank you so much.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Lorenzo, last week you were our host for another My First Hack. How was that?
It was good. I'm enjoying the series. Last week we had Katie Mazuris, who was a really badass woman in cybersecurity. So it was really fun, and I'm looking forward to more of these.
I interviewed her once in Vancouver years ago.
Was that for a CanSec West or something like
that? Yeah, I think it was a CanSec West or something. Yeah, whatever it was. Yeah. It was in Canada. It was old Canadian Ben. Anyway, let's get into this. Enough with the past, Lorenzo. So this one just like I read it and I thought to myself, of course, Silicon Valley has dipped its toes in the drug cartel game. So some feds are alleging that a tech CEO designed a narco sub for some drug cartels.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Like, this story is
fantastic.
It's incredible. It has really everything. This is the story of Marty Tibbetts, who was a CEO of a tech company. He founded an aviation museum in Detroit. And on the face of it, he had a very normal life. He died in 2018 in a plane crash. But what's interesting is that the DEA now alleges that on the side, he was living a double life with the name of Dale Johnson. And he was working with the narcos on smuggling drugs using something called parasitic submarines, which are basically drones that get attached to boats or ships and, you know, filled with drugs, and then can be released if, you know, there's danger of getting caught or something like that. And which is, I didn't know this existed. Like, this sounds like amazing technology, honestly. And the DA alleges that he was designing one of these drones with an associate, and the plan was to equip it with GPS and other and a modem so that he could like communicate with you know, the smugglers in case it got lost and they needed to retrieve it. So yeah, I mean, this is amazing.
Yeah,
sounds like a movie.
It does. I mean, so one thing is that drone technology, everyone thinks that drone technology, it's gone so far. You have land and you have air drones that have really advanced. But one thing that there hasn't been a ton of, and it's only just recently in the last probably few years, is underwater drones is a massive thing because they need to be able to create them, but it's harder to create the signaling as far as I understand it. So that alone was pretty crazy, but it's almost like Silicon Valley genius was solving a problem for drug cartels. Also, how many more things are going to come out of Silicon Valley that are just nefarious? Like, this one is a pretty clearly nefarious one. It's not just like, hey, Amazon, you know, you should allow your workers to have a union. It's they're literally creating drones for drug, like murderous drug cartels.
Yeah, like I definitely did not have that on my bingo card, to use a really tired joke. But yeah, this is, I mean, to me, it's amazing that this guy was, you know, like a successful CEO. He had like a normal life and he had the time to run a business, you know, a drug business empire.
Exactly. All right. So this next one, it's one of yours. And I knew it was going to be yours when I saw the headline because it's just a classic. We love to talk about it. Lorenzo, we love to talk about a critical infrastructure hack, especially hacking that water supply.
So last week, the U.S. prosecutors accused a 22-year-old named Wyatt Travnicek of accessing a water system, a public water system in Kansas, and trying to mess with it, which is a story that resembles a lot a story that we talked about here a few weeks ago that we reported as well, where someone that still is unknown, an unknown hacker, accessed a water system in Florida and tried to poison it by messing with the chemicals in the water system. In this case, the Travnicek did not cause any damage, at least as far as we know right now. And he was a former employee of the company that he hacked into. The feds have not said exactly how he hacked into this public water system, but you know, given the fact that he was a former employee, he probably just reused the password, or you know, they didn't revoke his access or something like that. And you know, that may mean that it wasn't a super sophisticated hack, but as you mentioned, this is interesting because this is public infrastructure, this is critical infrastructure, and you know, you would hope that they would be a little bit more careful. You know, if you fire someone or someone leaves, that's the first thing you got to do, right? You got to remove their access to the systems because you never know. So, yeah. And what's interesting is also that this is just a few weeks after this other case. And yeah, it just seems like, you know, we're close to one of these incidents actually causing some damage, which obviously nobody wants, but the trend seems to be that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I guess the thing is, as you know, so many people have been discussing critical infrastructure hacks and what it could become for years. I mean, it dates back to Leon Panetta saying that cyber Pearl Harbor, cue the clip.
The collective result of these kinds of attacks could be a cyber Pearl Harbor.
It's just something you hear all the time, and you think it's going to be this big sophisticated thing, and then little do we know, it's just some guy who still has the credentials.
Yeah, or in the other case from a few weeks ago, someone logging in and controlling like a remote computer. And in that case, they got caught because someone was looking at that remote computer and saw the mouse moving when they were not controlling it. So yeah, I think, you know, you would expect that all these super important systems were protected a little bit better.
Now, back to my absolute favorite subject of all time. Please cue that UFO music. This one, I just like, this is actually like what aliens are going to look like if we have to meet them. Like, it's not going to be some little green man. It's going to be some creepy looking like Arrival type alien where it's just a giant jellyfish. And in fact, for this story, the headline being scientists discover huge mysterious jellyfish-shaped structure in space. And the part that really freaks me out is that this is like 1 million light years away or whatever, so it's super far, but it's made of plasma?
Yeah, like this was a...
What?
Yeah, this story was an eye-opener for me, and I think Becky did a great job at explaining something that is super complicated. And yeah, the story is that some scientists found this thing called... they called it the USS Jellyfish, and it's just an enormous entity that they found 1 million light years away. And when I say enormous, I mean like it's unimaginable how big it is. It's as big as 340 million light years. So, you know, it's huge, and it looks like a jellyfish, and it's so crazy that the scientist who found it initially thought that there was a bug in his computer system. He thought that there was no way that this thing actually existed. And then he talked to his supervisor and they were like, actually, let's look into this. And yeah, it actually exists.
God is just a giant jellyfish in the end.
Yeah, who knows? Like, there's a lot of questions around this. People are still trying to figure out exactly what this giant blob is.
It's pretty cool though. I mean, this is the thing. Becky puts out a story every other day where it just like, it just reorders my understanding of the world or the universe, which is like not very sophisticated, obviously, but it's just something wild like this. Like, it's just unexplainable to the most brilliant people in the world. And I don't know, I hope it's something cool.
Yeah, maybe it is God. Maybe it is a sign of of a higher form.
Just two Italians debating who God is. Classic.
Hopefully the Vatican is not listening.
Okay, well, I guess that puts an end to the week for us, Mr. Lorenzo. I'll talk to you next week.
Yep. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Bye.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.